taught Sunday school, we were going over the history of Ephraim, and we were talking about why the Mormons would want to tie their boat to Ephraim, because they believe that they are the lost tribe of Israel, right? So we were going over the history of Ephraim and everything like that, and I felt that last time I was a little rushed when I was going in, so today I would like to, since it's been a few weeks, I want to review, go over some of the past notes that we've gone over to get a little bit refreshed with the situation, and just kind of slow down a little bit and hit all the points that I need to hit, because there is a lot of mentions of Ephraim in the Old Testament especially. So I want to slow down a little bit here today, take our time, go through this. I was going to do the whiteboard and do a little timeline, but my handwriting is so terrible, I'm not even gonna put that on you guys to even like try to read what I got writing on a whiteboard. I'm a lefty, and I thought lefties were supposed to have good handwriting, but they, not me, not this one. So I'm not gonna do the whole whiteboard thing. Yeah, it was just a complete mess, so that's just not my thing. I won't be able to, you know, be like Dr. Ruckman and draw as he's like preaching, and no, I am so narrow-minded, I can only have one thing on my plate at once, so we're not going to do the whole whiteboard thing. That was a disaster. I tried it on my own. It failed miserably. So we're just going to go through this. The story picks up in Genesis chapter 41, so if you would turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 41. Actually, you know what? I have some handouts, too, that I would like to give out. Let's see here. We'll go one. I got some maps that I printed out here. Yeah, if you would, that'd be great, yeah. I think I printed like 20 of them or so out. Yeah, well, you can see how much you have. We might be able to get everyone their own map. But yeah, we printed out some maps to give you a kind of a picture of what, you know, the time looked in that day. I mean, I got this right out of Pastor's Bible, so if you have Pastor's Bible, feel free to turn to the back and look there too, because that's exactly where I got these maps from. All right, but we're going to pick up in Genesis chapter 41, Genesis 41 and verse 50. So the story begins, "And unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of the famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, He hath made me to forget my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my afflictions." Okay, so Joseph has two sons, right? We know all the troubles and trials that Joseph went through, right? Being put in prison, being thrown in the pit by his brothers, you know, all the struggles and trials that Joseph has been through. He has two sons, right? And the first one he names Manasseh. And he pretty much says, "I'm going to name you Manasseh because it means that God has made me to forget all of the struggles and all of the trials that I went through in my life to get me to this place. You were worth it." So his firstborn son, he names Manasseh because he's, "You got me here and it was all worth it," right? All the struggles, God had made me forget all of this because of my firstborn son, right? His attention is not his firstborn son. So then Joseph has his second son, right? And he names him Ephraim. And he says, because of the cards that have been dealt to me and they haven't been kind, and I've overcame all of these, I've been fruitful in a land of my trials, I'm going to name you Ephraim, meaning you will be fruitful. Like, the naming of that is you will be fruitful in the land of your affliction, right? So he's naming Ephraim fruitful, meaning that, and it's setting up a prophecy, which you're going to see here in Genesis chapter 48 here soon, about what Jacob is going to prophesy about Ephraim coming down the pipe, okay? So he says that Ephraim is fruitful. The meaning of Ephraim is fruitful. So turn, if you would, over to Genesis 48, actually. Genesis 48 and verse 5. And it says, "And now thy two sons..." So Jacob is speaking to Joseph. Jacob is speaking to Joseph here. "And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simon, they shall be mine." So Jacob is telling Joseph, "Your sons are my sons," right? He's basically saying that your sons are going to get in on the inheritance of the 12 tribes of Israel. That's what he's meaning here. He's your sons are my sons, right? Your sons are counted as mine, okay? And in verse 6, and thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine. So any children you have after your first two, then you can have the rest of your children. But these two are special. These two are mine, right? These two are mine. And there comes to, let's see here, go down to verse 13 here. And Joseph took them, both Ephraim, in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand towards Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. So there's a whole reasoning behind this, right? You bless your firstborn with your right hand. So that's where Joseph is leading Manasseh, because he knows he is the firstborn. He gets the birthright, right? He is the firstborn of the sons. So he's leading him to Jacob's right hand, right? Because he's wanting to get that. But if we go on here, in verse 17 here, actually, you know what? First off, let's forget that. So there is a birthright, right? Manasseh is the eldest. He has the right to the birthright. Turn if you would, keep your finger here. Turn if you would over to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. Okay, so Reuben was the firstborn of Jacob, right? Reuben was the firstborn. Okay, so he should have been the one to get Jacob's birthright, right? He should have been the one to pass that down. But in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 here, now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, in his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. For Judah prevailed against his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, Jesus Christ. But the birthright was Joseph's. So this right here, what we're seeing here in Genesis chapter 48, is Jacob giving that birthright to Joseph and his sons, right? He is passing that birthright down unto them, okay? So that's what we're seeing here in verses 13 here. Joseph knows that Manasseh has the right to that, okay? But you can see here, if you look down in verse 17, and when Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, so now Jacob is doing one of these numbers, right? Because he led him directly to him. So this, whether this is a divine intervention of God or what it may be, Jacob knows exactly who he's giving this blessing to, right? There is no mistake. He is giving this birthright to the second son, right? To the younger son. In chapter 17, it says, And it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused it and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He shall also become a people, and he shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. So now you can see that this blessing is being passed on to Ephraim. I think this is going to play, I could be wrong, there's no proof of this, but I think this is going to play a huge part into this story, into the attitude of Ephraim, the entitlement of Ephraim going forward here, right? He was the younger brother, but now he's getting the greater blessing, right? I think that is going to play a big factor. Like I said, I have no proof, but you can see as you go through the history of Ephraim, the entitlement that the children of Ephraim have. They feel like they're entitled to certain things. But so you see that he gets the blessing. And in verse 22, it says, moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. Okay, so he's giving Joseph a double blessing, right? He's giving Joseph a double blessing of the inheritance, right? He's giving him, and we know that Jacob had 12 sons already, right? So you're saying, well, if Joseph gets two of those, then there should be 13 tribes, right? You do the math, 12 sons plus two. Well, how does that factor in? So you think, so we're gonna get into that here. Turn if you would to Numbers chapter 1. This is the first census that Moses had in numbering the men to go to war. The first census of Israel. And verse 32, of the children of Joseph, namely of the children of Ephraim, by their generations, after their families, by the house of their fathers, according to the number of their names, from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go to war, those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Ephraim, were 40,500. 40,500. Okay, so 45,000. If you look down here in verse in 34, it's going to talk about the children of Manasseh. In verse 35, it says, and those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Manasseh, were 32,000. So Jacob's prophecy about Ephraim being more fruitful is coming true here. We can see that Ephraim has over 10,000 more people to go to war, right? In the first census. So you can see that the prophecy which Jacob made is coming true here, right? That is the first census, okay? Turn, if you would, the next time we see the Ephraimites pop up here, it's the land grant. If you turn to Joshua chapter 16. Oh, I'm sorry. Numbers 13. I'm sorry. My bad. I got a little ahead of myself here. Numbers chapter 13. Sorry, a few pages over. This is the 12 spies that were sent into the land of Canaan to seek it out and to spy the land and see how good it was and see what the threat was, what they were going to need in order to overtake the land of Canaan, right? Because it was filled with their enemies. Okay, so they sent out of every tribe, one person gets sent, one spy gets sent here. In verse 8 of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshua, the son of Nun. Does that sound familiar? Oshua, I don't know why they have it spelled like this, because in the rest of the chapter, they spell it out Joshua. I don't know why they have it. If you look, turn the page over to Numbers chapter 14 and verse 6, here you go again. In Numbers 14 verse 6, it says, and Joshua, the son of Nun, right? So I don't know why they have it spelled it like this, but so Joshua was one of the 12 spies that were sent into the land of Cana, right? Obviously, we know from the children's song, 12 are bad and 2 were good, right? And Caleb and Joshua were the two good ones, right? And as we know about Joshua, after Moses leads the tribe of Israel, Joshua is the one that takes them into Israel and fights all the conquests and then divvies out the land, okay? And that's what we're going to get into here. So Joshua is an Ephraimite, right? Joshua has this great blessing of leading the children of Israel, right? He's an Ephraimite. That's a great blessing, right? That's a great blessing. So far we're on a pretty good scale here. Ephraim gets the good blessing, and then Joshua leads the children of Israel, right? So far, so good. Turn, if you would, to Joshua chapter 16. Joshua 16, and the lot of the children of Joseph fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho unto the east, to the wilderness that goeth up from Jericho throughout Bethel, and goeth from Bethel to Luz, and passeth along unto the borders of Arki to Adaroth, and goeth down westward to the coast of Japhleti, unto the coast of Beth Horon, at the Nether, and to Gezer. And the goings out thereof are at the seats. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, took their inheritance. And the border of the children of Ephraim, according to the families, was thus, even the border of their inheritance on the east side to Atarothadad unto Beth Horon, the upper, and the border went out toward the sea to Michaelmatha on the north side, and the border went about eastward to Tanishon, and passed by it on the east to Janohan. And it went down from Jehanahah to Ataroth to Naroth, and came to Jericho and went out to the Jordan. The border went out from Tapua westward unto the river Kana, and the goings thereof were at the sea. This is the inheritance of the children of Ephraim and their families. And the separate cities of the children of Ephraim were among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities that were villages. So if you look here on your map here, you can kind of see you got Jericho, the southern border, like it talked about. If you see here, right in the middle, right dead square in the middle of your map here, you got Ephraim, right? Seems like a pretty good location, right? Right in the heart, right in the center of Israel, right there, right in between the northern border is Manasseh. So you got Ephraim wedged in between Manasseh and Benjamin there, right? And the southern border would be Jericho all the way to the Jordan border, all the way to the Great Sea there, right? It's a pretty good chunk of land, I would say. Pretty good chunk of land. Comparatively so, such to like if you look northward up to Naphtali and Zebulun, they seem like they're kind of bunched together there. You know, there's not a whole lot of land up in like Asher and Dan and whatnot. So it's a pretty good chunk of land right in the heart of Israel, right? That's the borders of Ephraim. It's a pretty good chunk of land. Like I said, wedged in between Benjamin and Manasseh. So if you turn... Oh, sorry, in verse 10 here, if you look and read in verse 10 real quick, and they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt among the Ephraimites unto this day. That also is going to play a big factor going forward here. What was the commandment? That they should drive all of the people out of the land of Israel. They were not supposed to dwell with their enemies, right? They were not supposed to dwell. They weren't supposed to marry the pagans that lived there. They weren't supposed to follow the pagan gods that were supposed to be there. That's why they drive them out, right? A little leaven, leaveneth the whole lump, right? A little leaven, leaveneth the whole lump, right? So that was the commandment before they entered into Israel, right? And so that's going to play a huge factor here, the fact that they did not cast out all of the Canaanites, right, when they came into the land. Turn, if you would, over to Joshua chapter 17 and verse 14 here. Page over. So this is also the inheritance. So this is talking about the inheritance here still. And in verse 14 it says, "And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot, one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto?" So Ephraim seems like they're complaining about what they got. They're complaining about their portion. We just talked about it. Comparatively to other tribes, they have a pretty big lot. And they're complaining about it. We are a great people. Hey, Joshua, don't you know what my father did? Don't you know who my father is? Why are you giving me this little lot? Why are you giving, you're giving us one, don't you know we were promised two lots? Don't you know that we were promised two lots? I don't know if they are thinking they have some pull with Joshua here because Joshua is an Ephraimite, right? Maybe they think they have a little sway. Maybe they think, okay, well, if we get in the ear of Joshua, maybe he'll help us out here. Maybe he'll give us a little more. Maybe he'll give us, you know, they're always wanting more, right? They already got a great blessing, right? They got the birthright. They got the birthright. They already have a great blessing, right? They have a great blessing, and they're complaining about what they're given. They shouldn't have an inheritance. By all rights, Manasseh should have been passed down that inheritance. They don't even deserve it, right? And like I said, I talked about this the last time I preached. It reminds me of second and third generation Christians, right? It reminds me of second and third and fourth generation Christians, right? They've been passed down. You know, our fathers, our mothers have given us, you know, a church to come to. They dragged us to church every week. They took me to a Christian school where I had Jesus Christ. I didn't deserve any of that, right? I didn't earn any of that, right? That was just a blessing that God gave me of my parents, right? To bring me to a church, to bring me to a Christian school, to have that pumped into my ear, because I wouldn't be here without it. That was nothing I did. And now that great blessing passed down to me, now what are you going to do with it, right? What are you going to do with this great blessing, right? And like I said, with second and third generation Christians, it's like, if they were building upon the blessing that was given to him, then the church would be prospering right now, right? The church, the numbers would not be dropping off dramatically. If we were doing our jobs, the numbers would not be dropping off, right? So this is the attitude that Ephraim has, kind of reminds me of the same attitude that us second and third generation Christians have. We're not doing our part. We're taking that great blessing that the Lord has given us, and we're taking it for granted, right? We're making excuses for why we don't come to church. We're making excuses for why we see. And you can see here later on in the passage that Ephraim's about to make some big excuses here of why things should go their way. If you continue reading here in verse 15, "And Joshua answered them, If thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee, and the children of, so he's saying, if it be too narrow, then go and get it. Go and get it. If you are a great people that you claim to be a great people, then go out and get it, right? Go down and take the land and get it. Stop complaining. What do you want this handed to you? Right? And that just reminds me of so many second generation Christians. Continue reading. Now you're going to hear the excuses, right? The excuses are going to come now, right? And the children of Joseph said, "The hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land, that dwell in the land of the valley, have chariots of iron." So here you go. Here's your excuses. We can't do this because they got chariots of iron, right? We can't do this because they have chariots of iron. Both they who are of Bethshean and her towns, they who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, "Thou art a great people," right? "And hast great power. Thou shalt not have one lot only," right? Go out and take it. You're not getting any help. You claim to be a mighty people. You are a mighty people. Now go and take it. And you have the Lord on your side, right? You have the Lord. The Lord promised us this land, right? Where is your faith at? Ephraim and Manasseh, where is your faith at? We were promised this land, right? Don't make excuses. We knew that there were giants before. Before we came into the land of Canaan, we knew that there were giants here. We knew that we would have to fight them, right? No more excuses. Go and take the land. No help. And Joshua spake, in verse 18, "But the mountain shall be thine, for it is a wood, and thou shalt cut it down, and the goings out of it shall be thine. For thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong." You will do this, right? You will take this land. Go out and do it, okay? It's not going to be handed to you. Build upon the blessing that was given to you. Don't make excuses for why you can't. Go out and do it. And like I said, like we've seen in chapter 16, they don't drive out the Canaanites. They don't do it. So you can see that attitude, that great blessing that was bestowed on them has given them a sense of entitlement, right? They're entitled to this land. They did nothing to earn it. Now you see that attitude of entitlement starting to build in the children of Ephraim, right? So now you kind of can see their attitude throughout all of this and the excuses that they're about to make. So the next time we run into the Ephraimites, turn, if you would, to Judges chapter 1. In verse 29, neither did Ephraim, so this is just backing up what we've already known, neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer among them. So they didn't do what Joshua commanded them to do, right? They're living with the pagans, which was God's one rule, right? That was what Moses told them. You have to drive out the enemies. You cannot live with them. Right? They will corrupt you over time. Turn, if you would, over to Judges chapter 7. Judges chapter 7. Now, this is the story of Gideon's 300, right? We all know this famous story about Gideon and the Midianites, right? And the victories that he overcame here. So chapter 7 is about Gideon and Gideon's great victory, all right? In verse 24 of chapter 7 here, "And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, Come down against the Midianites, and take before them the waters of Beth-Bara and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters unto Beth-Horon." So this is after Gideon had won the battle, right? He's chasing them. He's chasing them all over Israel, right? And he sends messengers to Ephraim and saying, "You guys can cut them off. You guys can cut them off so we can stop this chase, right? You guys are in great position to cut them off so we can end this conflict and all go home to our families, right? You guys can do this." So this is after he had already got his great victory. Gideon had already got his great victory here. And Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters of Beth-Bara and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb, and they slew Oreb upon the rock. Oreb and Zeb they slew at the winepress of Zeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. So all is great, right? They accepted the request, and they went out, and they killed the prince. They ended the war. But look at their attitude here in chapter 8. "And of the men of Ephraim, and the men of Ephraim said unto him, Why hast thou served us thus?" You're like, what is going on here? Like, what? You guys won the war. What's your problem here? "That thou calledest us not when thou wentest to fight with the Midianites? And they did chide with him sharply. And he said unto them, what have I done now in comparison of you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God hath delivered into your hands the prince of the Midian, Oreb and Zeb, and what was I able to do in comparison of you? Then their anger was abated toward him, and when he had said that. So they were mad because Gideon didn't call them to go to war with them in the first place. They were mad that all the spoils of the victory, all of the praise was going to go to Gideon here, right? They were upset that they weren't going to get any of the credit. And he's saying, you ended the war for us. Why are you upset? You got the last kills. You killed the princes. You killed what we were after the whole time. These people have been plaguing us. Why are you so upset about? Because you're not going to get the praise of winning the war in the first place? So you can see that entitlement. It's going to continue to build here. It's going to continue to build as we go on here. Turn, if you would, over to Judges chapter 10. In verse 9. Moreover, the children of Ammon passed over Jordan to fight against Judah and against Benjamin and against the house of Ephraim, so that Israel was sore distressed, right? Okay, so Ammon rises up and goes to war with Israel, right? Turn, if you would, over. Oh, look over in chapter 12, or in chapter 11 here. You have the Gileadites, right? The Gileadites were descendants from Manasseh, right? The reference for that is Numbers chapter 26, verse 29. The descendants of Manasseh were the Gileadites, right? So that's the brothers of Ephraim, right? The brothers of Ephraim. So you have Ammon that has risen up against Israel here. Now in chapter 11, now Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a mighty man of valor, and he was of the son of the harlot of Gilead, and he begat Jephthah, and Gilead's wife bare him sons, and the wife's grew up, and the wife's sons grew up, and they thrust out Jephthah, and said unto him, thou shalt not inherit the father's house, for thou art a son of a strange woman. Okay, so you have Ephraim is just south, right? Just south of Manasseh. So they're bordering each other, right? And throughout here in Judges chapter 11, Jephthah ends up having a great victory over the Ammonites, right? He has a great victory over them here, right? And if you turn over and look over, so that's what Judges chapter 11 is about. In Judges chapter 12 here in verse 1, and the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and went northward and said unto Jephthah, wherefore passest thou over to fight against the children of Ammon, and didst not call us unto thee? So you have that same issue arising, right? Jephthah got the credit for this great victory, right, over people that were plaguing the Israelites. And here we go with Ephraim again. They're upset that they're not getting any of the praise, right, for going to war and winning this victory. And you can see that attitude now. You can see it again. Here it's happening again. We will burn thine house upon thee with fire. So now he's now the children of Ephraim, after this battle, they've gone off to battle, and now they're threatening their brothers, right? Because they're just north of them, right? Jephthah was, he's from Gileadite. He is from the descendants of Manasseh. That's their brothers to the north, right? That is their brothers to the north. And now he's going to threaten their brothers that they're going to burn their houses down? What is this attitude? What is this sense of entitlement? What is going on with these Ephraimites, right? You just have to wonder. Continue reading here in verse 2. And Jephthah said unto them, I and my people were at great strife with the children of Ammon. And when I called you, ye delivered me not out of their hands. I called you and you didn't come. What are you upset about? We did ask you for your help, and you didn't come. Where is this attitude coming from? Now you're going to burn our houses down because we're getting praise for the victory? What is this attitude that the children of Ephraim have here? And when I saw that ye delivered me not, I put my life in my hands, and I passed over against the children of Ammon, and the Lord delivered them into my hand. Wherefore are ye come up unto me this day to fight against me. Why are you coming up to fight me? I asked you for your help, and you didn't show any sort of sympathy for us. We were going through a hard time. Where were you at? What were you guys doing here? You know, and so you can see that attitude just it continues to grow. They want the praise, but they don't want to do any work for it, right? They don't want to build upon the blessing that was given to them. They just want the entitlement. They want the praise. They want the glory. They want you to remember, hey, Joseph was our father. Joseph did great in many things. You know, remember that one time when Joseph saved all the brothers and sisters, and they came and he fed them all and all that stuff, and he gave them a land in Egypt. Remember when my father did that? What are you doing, Ephraim? What are you doing? They asked you to come out and fight, and you turned them down. You turned them down, and now you're mad that they won the fight. So that's just, you just see that attitude. It's progressively getting worse. That entitlement is continuing to grow with the children of Ephraim. And like I said before, I think that has a lot to do with that whole blessing thing, with that entitlement attitude. It has to do with the blessing that was given to them, with that birthright that was given to them. So the children of Ephraim, they're going down a slippery slope here. They're going down a real slippery slope. And if you keep on reading here in verse 4, and Jephthah gathered together all the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim. And the men of Gilead smote Ephraim because they said, ye Gileadites are fugitives of Ephraim among the Ephraimites and among the Manassites. And the Gileadites took the passages of Jordan before the Ephraimites, and it was so that when those Ephraimites which were escaped said, let me go over, that the men of Gilead said unto them, art thou an Ephraimite? If he said nay, then they said unto him, say now, Shebueleth. And they said Shebueleth, for he could not frame to pronounce it right. Then they took him and slew him at the passages of Jordan, and there fell at that time of Ephraim 42,000. So because of this great sin, because of all of this, then the children of Manasseh said, well, if you want to fight, you got to fight. We just came out of a war, we'll fight another war. And they go out and they slay, and Ephraim is punished for this great sin that they've committed, right? They're punished for it, all right? So the next time we see the Ephraimites brought up, turn, if you would, to 2 Chronicles chapter 25. In 25 and verse 7 here it says, but there came a man of God unto him, saying, O king, let not the army of Israel go with thee, for the Lord is not with Israel, to wit, with all the children of Ephraim. Be it if thou wilt go, do it for the strong for the battle. God shall make thee fall before the enemy, for God hath power to help and to cast down. Okay, so Amaziah here is the king of Judah, right? And 2 Chronicles 5:27. So Amaziah here is the king of Judah, right? And he has an alliance here, right? He has the children of Ephraim, right, coming out to fight with him for a change. Ephraim is finally going to step up for a battle, right? They're finally going to go to war here, and it's funny here because. You know what? I don't think we have time to go into this. I don't think we're going to have time to get into this story. Let's pause it for today, and we'll end with that, and then we'll continue on, and we'll finish out with Ephraim, the history of Ephraim, next week. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this day, Lord. Thank you for the opportunity to get to come to church, Lord. I just ask and pray that you would be with us, Lord. I pray that you would be with Pastor, Lord, as he opens your word and preaches from it, Lord. I just pray that you would be with us, Lord. Your spirit would be here with us. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.